Now, a few weeks ago, during a chat about long COVID, we took a call from a local doctor who spoke to us about the dangers of rushing to recovery from viruses, flagging the risk of developing a long-term post-viral condition such as ME. And we promised that day that we would get her back on to chat to us in more detail about it. I'm very happy to be making good on that promise today as we welcome back to the show Dr. Elizabeth Murray. She has both an MBA, CHB and a Master of Medicine from UCT and is one of not that many local professionals who really specialize in the management of what is called post-viral fatigue syndrome. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Welcome to the show.
Pleasure, Pippa. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
You know, I was thinking this morning, Elizabeth, a few decades ago when you uttered the words myalgic encephalomyelitis or chronic fatigue syndrome, a lot of people would have scoffed at you. A lot of people would have told you this isn't a real thing, it's in your head. We've come a long way since then, though, in recognizing it as a very real medical issue. And attitudes have shifted significantly. Have they shifted enough, do you think?
They haven't shifted way at all. It's
really?
Absolutely dreadful out there. I only know about it because I got it. No teaching in medical school. Patients are told to go to a psychiatrist or even worse, they're told they're malingering as I was.
You know, it's if you look at all the sort of major international medical platforms, it's there, it's recognized, it's defined. So why do you think it's taking so long to catch up in practice in terms of the teaching of medicine?
Modern doctors seem to have first of all, they just quote what the professor quoted to them, which his professor quoted to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But doctors don't like to say, I don't know, and we don't know a lot about it. We know how to manage it, though. And, it's just a thing that's handed down, and that's how it is. Yeah.
Okay, so often then misunderstood or not looked into nearly enough, which means somebody who finds themselves experiencing it has to be very careful who they go to for help. I know that's one of the messages you really wanted to communicate today.
Yes. So I would phone or get your GP, I wouldn't go to a specialist, phone and say what is your, for the first 6 months it's post-viral fatigue, then you can call it that or ME. So I would phone the doctor and say, what is your approach? And if they say, oh, it's psychiatric or psychotherapy, then you don't go to that doctor and you confirm me. I am sort of my main aim is to train GPs. So I will send you and your GP things to read. I'll tell you what to do immediately. And if your GP is not going to manage it, there are doctors at the Ingress Clinic in Cape Town who know how to do so. So I can direct people to all those things.
Okay, so really important to make sure you're getting the right kind of help here. Let's take a step back. Elizabeth, can you explain to us what it is? You've just mentioned for 6 months it's called post-viral fatigue syndrome. Yeah. After that, there's a different classification. Broadly speaking, what are we talking about here?
We're talking about man-made classifications, lists of symptoms that you have to be able to tick off. They're not actually bad to make a diagnosis. And then, I don't know, there's just some arbitrary thing that after 6 months you call it ME, and for the first 6 months people will say you haven't got it, you've got post-viral fatigue. Management is the same, and if you are bad now, it is going to develop into ME if you don't catch it quickly.
So what are the symptoms that it presents with? If you want to reach somebody before it gets to that point, what do they need to be aware of?
Fatigue. So, but it's not really fatigue, it's post-exertional neurological exhaustion, and no doctors know that name, but it's not like fatigue. And then there are about 100 other symptoms, Pippa. It can, because it affects the brain, it's not a psychiatric illness, but it can have very severe psychiatric symptoms. That's not the main stuff. If someone says you just need a psychiatrist, then that's nonsense. It's primarily physical, but then I think from my head down, there's anxiety, depression, palpitations, very acute unpleasant sensations of everything from noise to light to wind, sound, really unpleasant. It's sort of like we perceive everything as greater than it is. So for you, a jet plane flying off in your near vicinity might be painful. For me, a loud voice is painful.
Okay. Interesting. I mean, we're getting comments in from people who've been there. Elizabeth, Sharon's just messaged to say, I had ME in 1991 when nobody knew much about the immune system or the connection between the mind and emotions in the physical body. It lasted until 96. I've since lived my life normally and eventually went back to most of my old bad habits, resulting in a mild kickback, which I recognized immediately. It's finished, but it was a good reminder to me. It's top of mind these days, Sharon's been toying with the idea of writing a book about it based on her experience, but her comment is, it is a really terrible disease. That is echoed by Anonymous, who says, I'm a 39-year-old male Now, I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia, they commented, age 21, have suffered pain and fatigue every day, live on codeine tablets, have really tried all the herbal and natural remedies without success. I have to keep taking pills just to get through the day and work. It is a similar condition to ME, and shares with it that you don't look sick, and most people will never understand because of that. I'm so glad they've mentioned that, because I know it's one of the things that people struggle with, that to the layman, they appear to be absolutely normal. There is no symptom that is visible to suggest that they are really gravely ill, and yet they may be struggling just to get through the ordinary activities of a day, Elizabeth.
Well, they may be entirely bedridden and need tube feeding.
Yeah.
I mean,
and
virtually unable to speak. So fibromyalgia, people think that fibromyalgia and ME, and there's another point about why doctors don't believe in it, they're on a spectrum. Mainly pain, it's fibromyalgia, mainly the exhaustion, it's ME. The person is welcome to call me. I can't promise a complete remission, but I can advise. And one of the big things is a physio who's properly trained. Don't go to any physio. They, in the PMPG group, I can help you find one. But they've got to be trained to this hold back treatment rather than push forward treatment.
What sort of treatment options? I mean, you're speaking about management, because as you said at the start, we don't yet know an awful lot about causes and we know about triggers. We don't yet know about causes that much, which means it's very difficult to treat. But how do you manage the condition?
Okay, the first thing is you must sleep. Now, doctors often, we train not to like the normal sleeping tablets. There are other things you can take, but you've got to sleep. And otherwise, and that is the first big corner to turn. The sleep can be very bad, insomnia, waking up early, you know, all that sort of stuff, unrefreshing sleep. You might sleep very heavily in the day. That's fine. Don't let anyone wake you. But at night, take something and do sleep hygiene and sleep. The second thing is you pull back to 40% of what you can do comfortably, not of what you can do. If you can climb half a mountain, you've got to climb less than a quarter, but that's obviously a crazy example.
Yeah.
And then you so gradually eke it up that your body doesn't even recognize. So you always plateau at that level for 2 or 3 days. And then if you step up a tiny little step, then your body's only going to crash back one tiny little step, you know, and you spend longer at the below level. So for me, it was learning to take 100 steps a day, then 105. Other people, it's like having an alarm clock. You get up for 5 minutes, you're down for 55, and then after a couple of days, you increase or decrease, or you might be an hour up. Whatever you do, spread your activities throughout the day with rest in between. Do not work all morning and collapse in the afternoon. And then the next thing is aquatherapy is very helpful. The main person to see you through this is a physiotherapist, as I've said, from the PMPG group, and you may need psychiatric treatment. Don't be scared of that.
It's
mainly rest.
We are in conversation with Dr. Elizabeth Murray, chatting to us about the different iterations of ME, chronic fatigue syndrome, post-viral fatigue syndrome, as it's known in the early months. If you've got questions, you are welcome to send them by voice note to 072-567-1567, or you can pop us an SMS to 31567. Sharon, I think it was mentioned, the bad habits that helped trigger a kickback in her case. Elizabeth, are there particular habits that need to be avoided if you are prone to this?
Yeah, you've got to stay within what's called your energy envelope, and I've explained that, and I believe, and I know a few people who have relapsed like 10, 20 years later.
Wow.
So I think there is always this risk, but you should have learned to monitor your life and how to deal. I mean, if I have an infection, I just go to bed for as long, and I always take an extra day before I sort of start working again. So you will learn how to deal with it, but you don't think because you had it 10 years ago, it can never come back.
Mm. Is anybody more?
Okay,
carry on, and then I'll ask my question.
The other thing I wanted to mention about doctors. Okay, 80% of diagnosis is history. That's how you get the ME, get to the ME diagnosis. 17% is examination. So they've normally got nothing on examination. They might have neurological signs. And then the third thing, like the 3%, is a test. I mean, you only know what tests to do if you know what the symptoms and examination are. And because there's not a test for this, doctors say they're unable to diagnose it and doesn't exist. I mean, that's crazy. We could diagnose heart attacks long, long ago before there were tests.
Okay. Fair point. What
and
I was going to ask you.
Symptoms here.
Yeah. So the list, so keeping a really, keeping a diary of symptoms, I would imagine, would be helpful before you go to the doctor to say, these are the things that I am experiencing, and keeping a list of when they happen, etc. As you say, no diagnostic lab test to turn to here. Do we know anything at all about causes? Is there research being done into whether it's genetic, whether there are environmental factors at play, anything like that?
Well, sorry, first of all, I wanted to say that you can list your symptoms, but you're going to find keeping a diary, if you've got bad ME, it's just too much for you. You get cognitive stuff as well. But the, you know,
okay, I'm sure of it.
Yeah. So then, sorry, what was the second question?
The causes, yeah.
We don't know. I mean, if it's the immunological system, that affects everywhere, including the brain. If it's neurological, it has primarily neurological symptoms. Don't go to a neurologist. I'm not well read on all the causes. I know a doctor who is, who's starting to read up madly. But there are all sorts of things. About a third of us are thought to have it genetically, as I did and other people I know have. Two prominent families and my friends. It's environmental. It's obviously, it could be that some people were sort of triggered by the COVID into having it. Sometimes people just slide into it, and we don't know a hang of a lot about it. But there is research going on. I stick to the clinical, how we're going to manage this, and is it the right diagnosis, rather than, they're good trials, but they're small.
Okay. Elizabeth, you mentioned COVID, and it's important to speak about that. In that previous phone call to us, you said to anybody who's battling with long COVID, manage yourself very, very carefully. Don't try and rush back to work. Don't try and rush back to full energy levels, because you run the risk of ending up with ME. Is that a possibility with all viral conditions? I mean, there's a lot of focus on long COVID, but can you get these sort of longer lasting viral symptoms with other viruses as well?
Sure, it's usually influenza. I had it, and it was noted after swine flu. And I was exhausted from work, and then obviously my immune system, adrenal, just couldn't. So that's what happened, is a sort of crash. Or someone has appendicitis or a head injury. So it's mainly viruses, but it's a lot of other things too. And there's about 2% of the population pre-COVID who've never had COVID walking around with this condition and being scoffed at.
Does anybody fall into the more likely to get it category? Is anyone more prone?
Yes, I think if you've got a family history, and I also think if you don't rest and you're exhausted. So sleep, always. With COVID, stay in bed. There's a story about a woman who was in ICU for 3 months, just flat in her back. She walked out of hospital with nothing wrong with her. So, I mean, from COVID, I reckon it could be that she stayed flat in her back for 3 months. And if I may tell you a short story from London, patients in a ward in the 1950s got an unknown virus, and so did all the doctors and nurses. All the patients who were at bed rest recovered. None of those doctors and nurses eventually had to take off work, and none of them went back. And that was in the 1950s, so we have follow-up.
There is a lot to be said for the value of rest, clearly. Here is a comment from somebody who's had it as well, saying, I was diagnosed with ME at Tigerberg Hospital when I was an employee there back in 1989. I was boarded at the age of 29 and told I would never work again. Listen to this, though. I slept for the next 5 years. It was a long recovery, but I now lead a relatively normal life, although I have had numerous relapses over the years. Supportive family and wonderful friends, plus a sense of humor, have been really important for me. They're again demonstrating the importance of extended rest.
Yes, and emotional support, and your sense of humor helps a lot. But don't let other people laugh at you.
We are chatting to Dr. Elizabeth Murray about post-viral fatigue, ME, chronic fatigue syndrome, as it's sometimes referred to. As you've said, a condition that, unfortunately, what we don't know is still a very long list as much as what we do know about it. Is there any kind of sort of support society or support group in South Africa, Elizabeth, that people can turn to?
Yes. No, so I first want to say... what did I want to say? The support society is the ME Association of South Africa. There's also a very good British association.
Okay.
So you contact the ME Association, and if it's in Cape Town, they'll probably contact me and say, can you recommend a doctor or whatever, or ask me to chat to the patient, that sort of thing. Yeah.
Okay. But besides rest, any other sort of management treatments that you'd like to mention that have played a positive role in the past?
Well, there's a lot of don't spend. You spend on the physio, you spend on the aquatherapy. You might have to have doctor's visits before you've done. If you haven't done all that, please don't go and spend on all the I'm going to dare to say snake oil. Homeopathy doesn't help. A lot of other things, high dose antibiotics you get from a doctor in Johannesburg do not help. It's disproven. And various other things like swinging bits of lead and analyzing your hair do not help. So please, if you're going to do that sort of stuff, please first spend your money on what is actually going to help. And there are various medications that people will need if they're depressed, antidepressants. But you've got to be very careful of those medications, because often ME patients are intolerant of them, as they are of various foods. So I would start on a quarter of an eighth of a tablet and then work myself up.
Okay. We have to wrap there, but Dr. Murray, I'd love to leave our audience with your contact details. If someone listening to this is going, I need to speak to this doctor or ask for advice, how do they reach out to you?
Okay, I'll give you my number, but you Google Dr. Elizabeth Murray. You'll find I'm actually an oncologist, doesn't matter. And you'll find me and a phone number. And my phone number is 021-794-6418. And I take calls between 10 and 8:30 and I will return them.
Thank you so much for taking this call. A long one it was too, Dr. Elizabeth Murray. Appreciate your input on the show today. If anybody was driving and couldn't jot down that number, I have made a note of it. You're welcome to email me after the show and I'll gladly connect you with Dr. Murray.